Well, welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, we cast our eyes over the All-Australian side and the controversy over the captaincy. We look at all the trade news, including what Freo should do regarding Bradley Hill and our take on the Stephen Coniglio re-signing at GWS.
That was out of bounds!
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant.
Yeah, terrific.
Oh, that is... Oh, that's what it is.
The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello, everybody. Thursday. And it's a Thursday heading into a weekend of waffle football and sandful football, but no AFL football. It is time for the second edition this week of the Duff and Quarters podcast. I'm sitting in the studio here with Glenn Quatermain just champing at the bit, waiting to get amongst the raft of juicy topics we've got in front of us. We're going to be brought to you by Tab Touch this week, as always. Quarters.
You know what I'd start with, Duff? You know what I'd do? I would be going straight into finals this week. I'd be having a 2-week break for the grand final, a Super Bowl type build up. That's what I favour. So you get your best players available on GF day and a bit rested.
I reckon you can do that, but I reckon that if you're going to do that, you have to have every week of the final series knockout and every team playing every week. I don't think it would be fair on a team to win a qualifying final, have a week off, win a preliminary final, have another week off, and then play a grand final. You'd almost be in a too much rest situation.
Sure. Yeah, but I think if
so they... you are anti-buy.
Well, I'm not anti-buy. I like the build-up to grand final better. I like the 2-week build-up because it's such a massive event. I like the Super Bowl type. You know, let's do everything. Let's get the Brownlow the first week of it so everyone can attend. And I just think you have more lead into the grand final. That's just my... It's not so much anti-buy. It's pushing it back.
I would urge the AFL to stand its ground on the bye. I like the bye. I think it enables every team the best opportunity to start the final series in good nick, and then it affords the teams that have actually earned the double chance to earn the week off and have the 2-week run into the grand final, and be fresher than the others. So I'm pro bye.
And as expected, Duff, a lot of talk about GMHBA Stadium v the MCG. And yes, of course, we get in a perfect world, I get Geelong's argument. You finish on top, you deserve to have a home final. But 50,000 people miss out. And I would just say this to Geelong.
Yeah, but they're Collingwood supporters.
Yeah, that's true.
Tell me when 50,000 humans miss out.
If you want to play your
finals... That was just a joke, by the way, Collingwood supporters.
Was it? If you want to play all of your home finals at GMHBA, simply, Duff, play all your games at GMHBA. So you don't play any games at the G, and let's see. So you can't have it both ways. Let's see what their answer is then. I bet you they agree to play finals at the MCG.
It's an interesting point that you make, and I think it's a valid point that you make. If you can't be half pregnant on this if you're Geelong.
Yeah. They would lose millions of dollars if they didn't play at the G.
Yeah, I don't know about millions. I think if once that redevelopment is complete at GMHBA Stadium and that becomes a 40,000 to 45,000, and I presume it would be a heavily corporatised ground with a lot of corporate seats, you can make a lot of money out of a stadium that size if you're a club the size of Geelong, and certainly West Coast and Fremantle prove that at Subiaco Oval. Yeah,
I'm tipping in a weekend when we're going to have a final at the Gabba and we're going to have a final at Giant Stadium. I'm tipping that the AFL need a final at the MCG between two big clubs.
See, I think that's nonsense too. Yeah. I think that's the way Melbourne people have been conditioned to think on this. I suspect that if it was a full house at GMHBA Stadium with good telecast beaming to, right across the country, I don't view it as very, very deleterious to the game. But I think Melbourne people have just been groomed to think that everyone has a right to go to the footy, and so therefore any game that we can play at the MCG should be played at the MCG. I don't think that's right. I think the integrity of the competition is far more important than that, and I think the integrity of the competition demands that first final be at Geelong.
So therefore, every home game should be at Geelong, or it's not that simple?
I like that argument. Mm. I think that's a valid point that you make, that they should, if they want to deem that to be their home ground, they should go all the way and have that as their home ground.
And certainly I think if we're talking a 45,000 capacity, then I'm starting to see the argument a bit clearer.
Mm. I don't see any point in doing the redevelopment at Geelong unless you're going to play finals there. And to me, sooner or later, the AFL has to move to be closer to a fair competition. And let's not kid ourselves. You know, Richmond and Collingwood are going to have a great advantage if they get to the end of September, because the grand final is going to be at their home ground, regardless of ladder position. So I think that's enough advantage. You know, I think at least all the lead-up finals you should earn the right to have home ground advantage.
So a few other issues, Duff, floating around. Firstly, the All-Australian. Now, we can pick the eyes out of the All-Australian team.
So how'd you go? Come on.
Yeah, I went okay. Yeah, I can't tell you exactly how many.
Which ones are in there that you didn't have? I got 17 of 22, and I reckon of the five I got wrong, or of the five that they were different to me, I would back myself to be right on at least
Hawkins.
Three of them. Yeah, and I reckon you were right,
I didn't have Pendlebury.
I reckon you're right there.
I didn't have Hooley.
And I reckon you're right there.
Yeah,
as well.
Did I have McRae?
I didn't have McRae. I'm prepared to concede I may have been wrong on that one. He's had a great season.
Of all of the players who missed out, I think Dusty is probably the one that's really glaring. Maybe Brad Shepherd as well, but certainly Dusty, I think, is a bit stiff.
For mine, Brad Shepherd gets in ahead of Bashir Hooley. I go for two tall forwards, not three. I don't see why you're trying to jam in a third tall forward. So that means the Coleman medalist, Jeremy Cameron, is my power forward, and Jack Darling is my second target.
So you're picking a real team.
Absolutely.
See, I find it, yeah. See, it's a difficult one because they're not playing anyone. But I guess, so let's look at the players who missed out who possibly could have put their hand up. We're talking Daniel Taylor at Adelaide.
No.
Hugh McGluggage.
Unlucky.
Mount a good argument
yep,
for.
Unlucky.
And Dane Zorko at Brisbane. Adam Treloar at Collingwood.
No.
Gaz at Geelong and Blitzavs.
No. Actually, Blitzavs, I reckon, because I wasn't convinced about Jeremy McGovern. And I picked James Sicily ahead of him.
Yep.
You could mount a case for Mark Blitzavs in that role.
Nick Haynes at GWS had a very good year. Sicily, you mentioned at Hawthorn. Ben Brown, I think, is really stiff. I had Ben Brown in my side.
Did you have him and Jeremy Cameron?
I had him instead of Hawkins. Yes, I did have both. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Ben Brown, Ben Cunnington. Certainly, if you're talking punch in the guts, all Australian sides, then Ben Cunnington.
Well, if you
there.
Go on a countback system where punches in the guts discount your ability to make it, Ben Cunnington misses out because he hit so many people.
Port Adelaide, Travis Boak couldn't have done much more.
I reckon Boak had to be in.
Yeah, Dustin Martin and Dion Pressier at Richmond. Rampy at Sydney, can't have him in my side this year. He's a very good player, but let's not forget he had a few brain fades this year as well.
Yep.
Gaff, Shepherd and Shuey at West Coast. Of those,
Shepherd.
Shepherd's probably the most unlucky. And Josh Dunkley at the Western Bulldogs, I think, yeah, unlucky. But again, this is a hard exercise, as you and I found out when we picked our 22. You finish with about 6 to 8 on your emergencies, and you're trying to make a case for them.
Now, the real topic of debate has been the All-Australian captaincy.
Yeah, look, I see why. That's not that Fife isn't a deserved winner. He certainly is, but Hearn is a more deserved winner. And I think Hearn should have got it last year, and I thought it was just a shoe-in to get it this year. So I was surprised by that.
So my take on this is I would have picked Shannon Hearn, but with four captains in the team, I think all of those people have claims on the captaincy. I mean, Fife at times carried Fremantle, Paddy Cripps at times carried Carlton.
Yep.
I think Hearn couldn't have done much more in terms of a captain's role probably 18 of the 20,
who's the
22
captain
games.
In there you've got?
Pendlebury.
Pendlebury, of course.
And yes. I didn't have Pendlebury in my team. So I'm not.
Yeah,
I'm,
I didn't either.
I'm no great, as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't bother me that Pendlebury wasn't captain. What I would say is the captaincy this year is a legitimate topic for debate. Last year it was a clear mistake.
It was a bit of a gimmick last year.
It was a clear mistake. They picked
Buddy,
a guy.
We're talking Buddy Franklin.
Yeah, so they picked a guy and made the captaincy of the All-Australian team a ceremonial honour instead of an earned achievement. and that was a mistake. Shannon Hearn should have been the captain last year, and that has probably fed the debate this year when Fife has pipped him this year. But I reckon, for me, I wouldn't have made Pendlebury captain because, well, one, he snuck in on the bench, and two, I didn't have him in my team. Of the other three, you can make a legitimate claim for any one of those three as the captain. Personally, I would have picked Hearn.
It showed great humility in accepting the award too, Nat Fyfe, we should add. And, gee, Duff, I didn't pick the outrage from West Coast fans.
Over Hearn's non-captain. you didn't anticipate
that?
As
soon as I heard it, I thought, oh, dear, there'll be some outrage.
West Coast fans, when an opposition team arrives at the ground at the right time, they boo. I think that outrage was anticipated, and I very much saw it coming.
So we'll have another award tonight, the MVP award, or the Lee Matthews Trophy. So the way this is done...
this is the AFLPA...
The AFL Players Association Championship. So what they do is each club, the players pick three players and they put those forward. And then I think it's the second week of the finals, all the players receive a ballot and they vote again on 3-2-1, but they can't vote on their own teammates. In fact, I think their own teammates are redacted from their ballots. And so that's how they come up with a winner. It's been a bit like the Brownlow. It has become a bit of a midfielder's medal. The Coaches Award is the third one, and Bontempelli has won that this year. It's a good award, and I think it's hard to know. Like I said earlier in the week, you know, if the Brownlow's the Melbourne Cup, then the MVP's the Cox Plate. Maybe the Coaches Award is the Cox Plate
If I was a player, that's very much a hypothetical statement.
You'd want
statement.
The Brownlow for the kudos.
If I was a player, yes, you want the Brownlow, but of the others, I would want the Coaches Association.
Well, it would mean
award.
The most probably in terms of the urn of it.
Well, you tell me who Geelong is nominated or who they haven't nominated, and I'll
argue. Well, I can tell you who they haven't nominated, Paddy Dangerfield.
So that almost...
He's not in their best three, according to the players.
If the Geelong players couldn't arrive at Paddy Dangerfield in their best three, I'm not sure how much the AFLPA award means.
Hawthorn didn't throw up Sicily either.
Well, that even further dilutes it for mine.
It's an interesting one. I think the Coaches Award, we saw Gawn win it last year. So, interesting, Ruckman don't win the Brownlow anymore, we hope they do. We hope that Brody Grundy or Max Gawn can pull it off this year. Ruckman's been a long time. So the Coaches Award, more likely to throw up a player, you know, that's not a midfielder.
Now, Quarters, we're moving on. Trades. You wrote a column in the newspaper today,
yes.
And you basically gave Fremantle the roadmap.
I did, and look
to
and
how to get Tim Kelly.
And it's open to debate, and I wanted to throw it out there to see what's Tim Kelly's worth is. But my suggestion was you go either. So Hill goes to St Kilda, you get pick five back. So Freo's already got pick six. You then either trade on pick five. Probably not two first rounders. Geelong will be wanting a first rounder for Kelly. But you could do it as a combination. You could throw in a Sean Darcy, who Geelong are really into, which of course leaves a bit of a void at Freo in terms of their ruck stocks. But there are players out there. They could still go to the draft and get a Luke Jackson in there. They've got Lobb. They've got Jones. They've got Lloyd Meek. They could possibly go for someone like a Billy Longer. It's complicated, but they've shown in recent years that they've been very deft, Freo. They've pulled off some good trade moves. And it's theirs to the ball's in their hands because they've got Hill on a two-year contract. I really hope they maximise it and do on-trade him and get value for him. But, yes, it's really interesting. It's going to be really fascinating to see how it all pans out. Somewhere in the mix of that is Jack Stephen going from St Kilda to Geelong as well. And he's a boy from Lawn, so he's sort of a Western Districts boy as well, as is Sean Darcy, 21-year-old ruckman, finding his way at the moment. He's from the Cobden in the Western Districts of Victoria. And as I found out in my digging, I wasn't aware of it, but Kelvin Darcy, his grandfather, was Polly Farmer's fitness coach when he was at Geelong.
Is that right?
Yeah, so there's a real Geelong connection there.
He must have been a different build to Sean.
Yeah. Well, his uncle's Tim Darcy.
Who played fullback in the 92 grand final.
Yes, and his dad, so Geelong Essendon player, and mainly Geelong, and his father Greg, who's a bit of a Cobden fit running legend too. So really interesting backstory there. And apparently Polly and Kelvin used to, it's been a bit of a Polly week, but of course, had his state funeral on Monday, but they used to have a gym session every day and then go for a long run.
So, as we understand it, Brad Hill has formally requested a trade back to Victoria. There has been no club specified at the moment, although we strongly suspect the club is St Kilda. We strongly suspect that the offer from St Kilda is around $400,000+ a year,
yep,
which is a big offer for Brad Hill. And that tends to suggest that Fremantle would be well within their rights to say, we want your first draft pick.
Yep.
So, I'm going to throw a hypothetical at your quarters. Yep. Say Fremantle gets that first pick from St Kilda, which gives them basically picks 5 and 6. That's before any priority pick given to Gold Coast. Is it out of the question that Fremantle should just say, let's have another Andrew Brayshaw, Andrew Cherry year at the draft. Let's take 2 top 10 draft picks and let's try and build a core of talent that may eventually take
us
to the top.
Not out of the question at all. They have to weigh up what price, you know, how badly they want Tim Kelly. Tim Kelly's very good footballer.
So what would you be doing if you were them?
If I was them, I would be seriously looking at one of those early draft picks for Kelly and whatever else it takes. So my argument today was you could say to Geelong, let's throw Sam Menegola in the mix because he'd be really handy at Freo too.
I got a phone call from Sam Menegola's father.
Yes.
You wrote that in your column, didn't you?
Yes.
He was a little perplexed at reading that in your column. Oh, well. He wanted to know if you were working on any inside knowledge.
Of course, we're talking about Todd.
Sean.
Sean Menegola.
Sean Menegola, yes.
Of TV.
Can we reassure Sean, you weren't working on inside knowledge, you were just throwing up hypotheticals.
I was throwing up hypotheticals, yes that's correct. Right. Yes. Which is what it's about.
If you're listening, be reassured.
Yes.
For now.
But I think that, it's complex, but I want them to keep at least one of those early picks. I would like them to keep one and
absolutely
go to the draft. And I think someone like a Luke Jackson, who has trained with them, I think he would be perfect if he's still available.
Okay. And the thing they have to be wary of is that they have a next generation academy pick, Liam Henry. Now, it depends on how soon someone bids for Liam Henry. If Liam Henry attracts a very early bid, which is not beyond the realms of possibility, Fremantle is going to have to use a pick to match that bid. So they have to bear that in mind. Mm. And so they need to be careful they don't trade too much away. I think their aim should be to get one top 10 draft pick and Liam Henry amongst those early picks. I think that would be a good boost
to
their talent stocks.
It'd be nice to throw Tim Kelly in there too, and Sam Menegola if they're able.
Oh, well, there's some talk that Quinton Narkle.
Well, he's on
the table
apparently.
So that's
Chris Scott has been talking him up in recent times.
I'll tell you what, Geelong would want to be very careful before they sent Quinton Narkle on his way.
Well, we were asked to list our breakout contenders for the finals just before, and I put Quinton Narkle down for me because he's just hit some form, a real purple patch.
Yep.
He could be a real X factor for them. I mean, when they bat pretty deep, Geelong. Yep. The other thing this week that happened, and I will I'll put my box of tissues away, was Stephen Coniglio turned his back on very lucrative offers from Hawthorn and Carlton.
Yep.
And signed on with GWS for 7 years, $7 million. As much as you'd love to see him at your club, and I've said this before, Duff, I like it when players stay with the one club. That's not the landscape we're in anymore.
Mm.
It's very rare, but I really like the fact that he's shown loyalty to that club, and it's a great reflection on the young man. Mind you, 7-year contract, still pretty decent. So he's been well looked after, but, I applaud him for that. And if I take my supporters hat off, my football hat on, I'm really happy for that result.
Interestingly enough, the speculation about who was bidding for Stephen Coniglio had West Coast in the mix as well.
Yep.
Now, that tells you that if West Coast were able to bid somewhere close to $1 million a year for Stephen Coniglio, they're going to be throwing a lot of money at Tim Kelly.
Yeah. They're still very much in that chop up.
And then it's just a matter of whether they can get the trade done. So that's going to be an interesting thing for them to do and to work through. I still suspect that West Coast is the likely destination for Tim Kelly.
I think Freo's got more to play with, but I agree with you. But I think Freo's got more to play with.
They've got more to play with
at
as far
moment.
As trade
that's right.
value goes. West Coast may have, and I don't know how this happens, but West Coast may actually have more salary cap space.
Yeah. Speaking of Freo, where are we at with the coaching? I believe Longmuir has been spoken to this week.
So Justin Longmuir has been spoken to. He was spoken to last week, very preliminary discussion, and he was spoken to this week, as I understand it, might have been as recently as this morning. Peter Bell had a conversation with Justin Longmuir, and it was basically about this is how the process is going to run, this is the way we'll be doing it. Collingwood's preference was that Fremantle would go through the process with Justin Longmuir on Sunday, so that after that, Justin Longmuir could knuckle down and get ready for the big final that they're playing against Geelong Friday night. We strongly expect Fremantle will also talk to Peter Sumich, and there will be a similar conversation with him. Yep. They have named their coach selection process.
Luke McFarlane joining them.
Is the it's independent choice, yeah. selector on that. And Damien Eaves, who's a business associate of Dale Alcox with the ABN Building Group, he is going to be the facilitator for that whole process.
McFarlane would have played with Longmuir and would have played under Sumich.
That would be
so
right.
So you have a good knowledge of both of them. And he's a good choice. Was a great player, a deep thinker, and looks at things a little left field too. So I think it's a good choice for that selection panel.
And when it's announced, he could do it in a song.
He could.
He's a very good singer.
He's very talented. He is. So that's where we're at with the coaching. Of course, there will be other candidates interviewed as well.
Yeah, I hope they cast the net wide. I hope they talk to a lot of people.
Well, they have to talk to Brad Scott.
And if someone catches their eye or catches their attention with the way they present,
yep.
I hope they take note of it. You know, there'll be a lot of pressure on them to hire a person with Fremantle links, and there's a school of thought that Fremantle links mean Peter Sumich because he grew up in Fremantle and is very much a Fremantle identity, and there's a school of thought that Justin Longmuir means Fremantle because he played for the club. I just reiterate what I wrote in a column last weekend. Go through the process, and the person that impresses you the most is the person you hire.
Yep.
And that gives you your absolute best chance of getting the best coach available.
So as far as the CEO position goes, that'll be more of a factor after they get through the coaching.
Yep.
And there are some names that have been thrown up, and I believe we can put a line through one of them, and that was Mark Brayshaw.
So my understanding is that Mark Brayshaw would prefer not to be the CEO at the club where his son is playing. So, of course, Andrew Brayshaw runs around for Fremantle. Oh. Mark Brayshaw, not only would he have to cross the country and bed his family down again in Perth, given that he's moved away some time ago to live in Melbourne, he would view it as a little bit of a conflict to be the boss of the club where Andrew was playing.
Might have two sons at Freo and one at West Coast.
He might do. Well, you think there's still a
Angus?
Little bit of a whisper there?
Oh, yeah, I think there is, yeah. So, Mark Brayshaw, the other names that were mentioned were James Clement.
James Clement runs a $50 million, I think it's like a fishing industry sort of business. So he's a person who has a good pedigree in business, obviously has a very strong pedigree in football. Interestingly, with James Clement, his football club links are as strong towards Collingwood as they are towards Fremantle because, of course, he split his time between the two clubs and probably had his better experiences as a player with Collingwood. But he's back in WA now. Very intelligent person. Very measured person is the way I'd describe James. And certainly a person that Fremantle should absolutely be talking to in that hunt.
He's a person who Mick Malthouse obviously spent a lot of time coaching and loves him as a player, one of his favourites.
Yeah, and James loves Mick as a coaches. But the other one, Quarters, before we move on, the other one I would definitely talk to if I was Fremantle, and you might pick up the phone and ask, and he just says no when you put the phone down, is Craig Vozzo, the West Coast football manager. To me, he's I think Fremantle needs a strong footy-based CEO. I think they should leave Peter Bell where he is and make sure he gets his head around the footy manager's job and gets to be one of the best football managers in the AFL before they do anything.
And I'm hearing that he would like the CEO gig, but not just yet.
Yeah, I think Peter knows that he's on a very steep learning curve where the footy manager's position is concerned, and he wants to be well on top of that before he looks at higher honours, if you like. To me, Vozzo is a person who is ready to move onwards and up. And every time I talk to Craig, I'm just incredibly impressed by how there's a quiet strength about him. Mm-hmm. And I think he would help Peter organise the footy department at Freo. And really, if Freo gets its footy department organised, I think the rest of it will take care of itself. I think they're a big enough club to do very well financially, provided they're putting a strong team on the park.
As you say, it's certainly worth the phone call at least. And I'll throw one last left fielder at you. Guy who was GM at the very successful Perth Wildcats, and I think at the moment he's with the Western Force, and that's Nick Marvin.
Nick Marvin, yes.
So he'll certainly put his hand up, I think, and he's worth the conversation.
So what are his great strengths, as you know?
He's good, pretty good people person. He's a very good manager. So yep. That's the first thing. What's his football background? That'd be the question. What would be his ability to convert to AFL? But look, he is a good manager. He's proven it over a long period at the Wildcats. So definitely worth talking to.
Okay. Now, there's a bit of injury news at West Coast. Shannon Hearn did not make the trip to Melbourne for the All-Australian team announcement.
Would he have, if he was captain?
No.
No, it's more important than fish to fry, isn't it?
So he's got a hamstring problem that he suffered in the dying minutes.
Hamstring problem, Duff, or hamstring awareness?
I think it's a problem.
Yeah.
I think that if it was just awareness, I suspect he would have gone to Melbourne for the All-Australian announcement. So I think you can put a question mark next to Shannon Hearn for the first final against Essendon
huge
on Thursday
out,
night.
Although, huge out, but it's not a game. You know, I'm glad it's week one, put it that way. Mark Hutchings is the other one who not as important as Hearn, significant. And if you think about his role in last year's final series and his role in last year's grand final on steel side bottom, if they go deep, he's going to be critical to them. So we're thinking not next week, but possibly the week after.
That's right. And obviously, if they play Collingwood the week after, then
huge.
Then Mark Hutchings' inclusion would be very big.
I'd be shocked if he wasn't, yeah.
And if you're them, you roll the dice with Nick Natanui, provided he gets retraining?
Absolutely, I do. I think he is, at the moment, they need something, a bit of invigoration, and I think he makes a really, really good midfield even better.
So here's your selection conundrum if you're West Coast Quarters. And obviously every team tries to maintain a balance of talls and smalls. So Nick Nat comes into the team. Does Tom Hickey remain in the team?
I think he has to.
Does Oscar Allen remain in the team?
Well, there's your question mark. Who's your most... Well, Oscar Allen, Jake Waterman...
You are getting very tall. If you, and I know what you're saying, like Oscar Allen's very mobile.
I think I'm sticking with Oscar Allen at the moment.
So Jake Waterman's the one that gets squeezed out?
Yep, and it's unfortunate for Jake. He's done nothing wrong, but I think that's where I'd go. I'm a big Jake Waterman fan, but I'm even bigger Oscar Allen fan.
My concern on that would be, I reckon, one, Nick Nat's going to be underdone.
That's why I'm staying. I want
Hickey
in there.
So Hickey has to play.
Yes.
And... 2-3, that means that you've got one ruckman who's unlikely to do much running, and you've got another ruckman who runs well, which Hickey does, but he's still a ruckman, and then you've got a third player who's been playing sort of like as a hybrid forward ruck.
Yeah.
The one thing about keeping Waterman in the team, and I agree with you, like Oscar Allen would be incredibly unlucky to get squeezed out, but it does create a little bit of a team balance conundrum
for
West Coast going into that Essendon game. Will you still be tipping West Coast? I presume you will against the Bombers.
Yeah, I will be.
And you know what, Quarters? This is the other thing about that game. It's really, really important. And Adam Simpson will reel back in horror when I say this because a final's a final and there's no predetermined outcome for final. But it's really, really important that West Coast puts this game to bed
early.
They don't want a last man standing trench warfare
thing with
battle
Essendon
in
is...
this game.
They've made the finals, and I think that's a tick for Worsfold to continue in that role. It's a bit of a free hit. You're coming over here, you're not expected to win. So you just throw caution to the wind, you get that half-back game they've got going. And so it is a worry. It's a bit of a free hit for them. It was a bit of a free hit for Hawthorn last week too.
Yeah, it was. Well, Hawthorn
didn't think they were probably going to make the finals because they expected the Dogs to win.
Yeah,
but and it's a bit of a different situation. Really well coached, and you know they did it well. But I just think it is really nothing. Not that much to lose the Hawks last week.
Can Essendon take anything from what Hawthorn did? Because I suspect they're a very different team.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think they'll look at it, but they're not going to change their game style in a period of 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't be able to pull it off anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, so no, I don't think so. I think they'll look at, I still think they have to be accountable in their forward 50.
Yeah.
But they'll look at that side of it, and they should take some confidence from the difficulty West Coast had in clearing the ball, but they have to stick to what's got them there.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Essendon tends to attack very boldly from the back half.
Yeah.
Hawthorn was able to nut West Coast ball movement from the back half, which was a significant factor in that game. All right, well, there's a lot to look forward to. There'll be updates on trades every week in the West, on Perth Now and on thewest.com.au. We'll be fascinated to see how it all unfolds. Of course, this is the big season and this is the silly season, all melding into one until we get to the trade period at the end of it all after the grand final.
Wait for that.
So it's going to be a fascinating period. Thank you very much for joining us. We've been brought to you by Tab Touch, and Quarters and I will be back on Tuesday for what is almost a Finals Eve Duff and Quarters podcast.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch.